If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And this week's show is a special show, kind of an emergency show, episode 301, because of what's been going on in Colombia since the 21st of November. This was a long-announced strike and protest which was going to take place, originally announced by the CUT, the CUT, that's a central workers' union. And, of course, they were out there, and their strike was based around labor and pension reforms proposed by the government. And then it's kind of spiraled and snowballed into something much, much bigger. We're including anti-fracking groups. We're including more environmental groups. We're including indigenous groups who are protesting against the killing of their number in Cauca. We're including students and educators who are complaining against corruption and requesting that the government release the funds they promised for education earlier in December, January. There are people out there protesting against the legalized hunting of sharks for shark fins. You name it, people are protesting. And I, for one, was out there on Thursday, the 21st of November, in an incredibly peaceful march. Official figures put it here in Bogota at around 250,000. But in truth, it must have been somewhere closer to 800,000, as people were saying, as the organizers themselves were saying. And we were there with displaced unions, displaced groups from the Pacific coast. We were there with the CRIC from Cauca. We were there. We talked to loads of people. It was diverse. It was peaceful. It was carnival-esque. And much of the same was to be found around the country, even in, you know, intermediary cities like Neiva, Ibagué, Pasto. All of these places had protests. So we were looking at perhaps more than a million people out there in the streets on Thursday. And since Thursday, things have kind of spiraled out of control for the government. The government of Iván Duque, President Iván Duque, he came out and spoke on Thursday night, 5 minutes of hot air in a tone-deaf response to what's going on in the country. He absolutely misinterpreted and misread the situation, creating a speech around security and order and how the military would come out and protect the cities and protect the country. And frankly, it was misread in such a way that people turned out in greater numbers around. And each night now we're seeing cacerolazos, so the Latin American way that we protest by hitting pots and pans. The plazas and squares in Bogota are filled up every single night. There was a curfew in place on Friday night placed in Bogota. But then on Saturday, the people were out again. On Sunday, and when this has been recorded, so if anything happens between Sunday and now, Tuesday, of course, we are exempt any fallout from that. But at the same time, the situation is incredibly tense here in Colombia. So I'm here with our news guy, well, the guy who knows everything that's going on in Colombia. He's in Medellin. It's Adrián Alsama from Colombia Reports. And he's going to talk with us, and we're going to talk, and we're going to skip the news segment this week because this is an emergency, broadcast, an emergency podcast, to try and explain to you out there what is happening on the ground here. So Adrián, thank you for your time, because I know you've been working all through the night, getting your articles out there and informing the people about what's going on in Colombia.
Thanks for having me.
No, it's always a pleasure to have you. And of course, you know, we need to we need to clarify things. I mean, the international press is covering, you know, to some extent, they're explaining a little bit that Duque is weak and that he's kind of misread the situation. But it now feels like we've gone way beyond this now. This whole issue, this whole period has run away from the government. It's completely out of their hands, in my opinion. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, the government is at this point completely cornered and outnumbered by the people.
That's right, isn't it?
You said that it was started by the labor unions, but. What you're experiencing is just a general rejection of Duque and his style of governance. People are just fed up of the double speak and the militarism. But basically, him like pushing the far right agenda of the Democratic Center through Congress without a majority approval of Congress, so it's like to me it feels like that the people are rising up in an attempt to prevent a dictatorial regime.
I mean, there's no prevention of it. We've got soldiers in the streets here in Bogota, and the images from Saturday when students and other like young citizens and whomever were trying to march to the Plaza de Bolívar, and they were there on the Calle 19, the 19th street, so only feet away from where Gaitán was killed all those years ago, April 9th, 1948, where an ESMAD, so a riot policeman, shot his gas canister at an 18-year-old student. At this moment, his name's Dylan Cruz, and he's in a critical condition in a hospital in an induced coma. But I mean, this kind of behavior, and you know, we talk about our isolated incidents of police brutality, but let's clarify this. They're not isolated anymore. There are too many.
No, there's evident and unconstitutional repression of people's constitutional right to protest, because basically the government is misreading the situation as such that it believes that it is dealing with an insurgency rather than a national strike. What the people were actually were holding, if you look at Thursday's marches, like it was fucking carnival everywhere in Colombia, like here in Medellin. Like the fan clubs of Atlético Nacional and Independiente Medellín, they were partying together. Like it was one big party and one big rejection of the Duque administration and the insane misrule that we've lived over the past 15 months. However, the government from the beginning has been using a counterinsurgency strategy. So, like before the marches, there were attempts to criminalize like the social unrest that was going on, like the people were displeased with the government, but that's not insurgency. Like insurgency is like trying to overthrow the state, and nobody was or is trying to overthrow the state. However, in the eyes of the government, the national strike was part of an international conspiracy to overthrow the state, and thus when such a thing happens, then the military steps in, and that's when everything spiraled out of control.
This is one of those things that I'm permanently trying to address in an academic fashion about the military and the police both being controlled by the Ministry of Defense. I mean, the military, by all accounts, should be for national sovereignty, not for an internal issue, and the police should be dealing with these, you know, let's say the violence,
public order
and so on. And yet we have this mix which allows a Minister of Defense, currently Carlos Holmes Trujillo, who is very hawkish, to basically be trigger happy on this front, as if we're being invaded by Russians and Venezuelans and
exactly
leftist beliefs from Chile and Bolivia, you know.
Like before the protests on, so let's do a chronology.
Yeah.
On the national strike was on Thursday.
Yes.
On Monday, the military went into its highest level of alert, which is the same level of alert of an impending attack of a foreign enemy state. So clearly, at that point, like, there's a scenario going on that's a military scenario. And during the strike, while like the national strike itself was like an explosion of joy and people peacefully marching, the government was in siege mode. And instead, and this is where Duque completely screwed up. He completely failed to acknowledge like why people were on the street rejecting his governance, which generally was like violence has been going up, unemployment has been going up, and people were fed up with that stuff. And want like a normal, like they want a competent government, not like a bunch of sort of like Latino fascists thinking that like not acknowledging the democratic state. And with the horrible consequences that we've been experiencing, like because of Duque's misrule, the FARC guerrilla started rearming, violence has been increasing, nothing is being done about crime. Unemployment is up, and basically people are told like accept this, and if you don't accept this, then you're an insurgent, and you go to jail.
This is what I'm, you know, what we talk about government being inept and so on and useless. What it is more than anything is just inoperative. Nothing is happening. And I keep thinking of this as especially when you look at the violence, let's say these pockets of aggression and violence, as regrettable as they really are, that occurred on Thursday afternoon. I'm not talking about the events that took place downtown in the Plaza de Bolívar. What is of far more interest to me are these young people on the Avenida de Cali with Calle 140 and the Avenida Suba and in Soacha and so on. So we're talking about the far north, the far northwest, and the far south. These are these in-between spaces of depressed living areas where the youth have no options and are totally disenfranchised from whatever is going on in this country. They don't have healthcare. They don't have education opportunities. They don't have job opportunities and stability. Everything is an informal labor market where they are. These are the guys we should be watching in terms of who needs to be, you know, we need to march on behalf of these people, in my opinion.
Well, you're talking specifically Bolo Otano.
Yeah.
The violence that we've seen in Bogota and Cali.
Yeah.
The only places where violence took place, because in Medellin the protests have been ongoing and they've been entirely peaceful. And in other cities too. However, in Bogota and Cali, there have been clear sabotage attempts by the security forces. I do think that the violence the clashes you talked about that happened on the road to the airport were between disenfranchised youth and the police. However, what has been far more significant is the police terror campaign that happened on the night between Friday and Saturday. Because there is evidence and congressmen are asking all kinds of questions. There is evidence that Duque imposed a curfew to keep people at home, after which police began a terror campaign of unimaginable proportions to impose terror on the population. When people found out about this on Saturday morning, And ironically, like, media are not reporting on it on this adequately, but there's ample evidence that both in Cali and particularly in Bogota, the security forces have been sabotaging the protests on Thursday. So, like, there's evidence of policemen trying to infiltrate the marches on Thursday in Bogota. There's evidence of policemen changing clothes so they can start throwing rocks at the mayor's office and thus justify an intervention of the ESMAD, the riot police. This is a counterinsurgency strategy. This is a planned sabotage of what they believe is an insurgency, but in effect it's the sabotage of a legitimate protest and a legitimate peaceful protest. Because like in Bogota and everywhere else in Colombia, like the people on the street were just like expressing their inconformity with the government. They were not there have been voices for Duque to resign, but only in response to his persistent denial of reality. And the reality that we are dealing with, that we are constantly being extorted by police, taxes have been imposed on the middle class, while there have been corporate tax cuts. People are just not in agreement with those policies. And so what happened in Bogota particularly, which is not what happened in the incident you mentioned, is that there was a state sponsored terror campaign going on in the night between Friday and Saturday in an attempt to instill fear on the people. Unfortunately for the government, and this backfired, and people woke up like even more resentful with the government. So what happened then, when people found out that it was the police that had been terrorizing them after Duque imposed a curfew, and the same happened in Cali the night before, people got even angrier and went to the city center for like another cacerolazo. At that point, they shot Dylan Cruz in another illegal attempt to repress legitimate peaceful protest. And at that point, the floodgates opened. People just took over the city to the point where thousands of people were standing in front of Duque's house, like chanting murderer and chanting that Uribe is a paramilitary and all kinds of things. And at that point, the entire military strategy in response to the strike and the social protests just completely collapsed. And Duque was quick enough to announce talks with Claudia Lopez on for today's Sunday. Because that's like how this is going to end. Like, this is going to end by talking to the people who organized the strike, negotiate negotiate a deal, and everybody goes back to work. The government's refusal to do this and the government's denial of the people's grievances has been what has been escalating this situation, and the violent repression escalated it even more. In Bogota, in Medellin, we have not seen any of this. In Medellin, the protests have maintained entirely peaceful, fun, really. Like if you like if you're looking for a girlfriend, go to Parque Poblado, because there's a whole lot of fun people protesting. It's a big party, and it's a big party of resistance. Like, people are basically, no, we are not going away until you listen to us. And unfortunately, Duque on Sunday started talks with initially Claudia Lopez, who I believe would be a wonderful mediator, and who will also be able to explain to Duque that this is not an insurgency, that he basically needs to stop being a tinpot dictator and start acting like the president of a democratic republic, which includes, for example, acknowledging that as head of state, he is obliged to fulfill promises made by previous administrations, implement the peace deal made with the FARC in 2016. Like, Duque has done none of this. He simply doesn't acknowledge that he is the representative of the executive branch of government Instead, he believes he's like Louis 16 or something. Like that he is the state.
It's I find myself in this situation, and if we there's a lot of stuff in that last intervention of yours. I find myself thinking about, you know, I am not a fan in any way of Enrique Peñalosa, the mayor of, current mayor of Bogota, but his statement 2 days ago or a day ago saying that he, you know, there is an orchestrated plan to destabilize things from within. I thought at the beginning that he was talking nonsense, but of course all of this news and all of this evidence coming forward gives, you know, heralds a great deal of fact and heralds a great deal of credibility to these statements, of which you spoke as well. The other thing that I was thinking about in this one is that it kind of feels, no one really on Thursday. I mean, there were smatterings of people in the march on Thursday asking for Duque's resignation, but we've now moved into that. That is the number one sort of.
But that is appeal. Just people talking, you know. Like nobody really wants Duque to resign. There's like no reason to. Like still, there's no reason to break with the electoral cycle. Mm. Like all Duque needs to do is is execute policies that have a majority support in Congress, and that's not what he's been doing. If you look at like how he's been trying to sabotage the War Crimes Tribunal, for example. How he's been trying to sabotage the inclusions of the political participation of victims in Congress, how he's pushed through a tax reform in violation of the Constitution. The guy is simply not acting legally. Like he's doing things his way and doesn't care if things are legal or constitutional, and that's the big problem, and that's what he needs to change. He needs to run a democratic government. You can't govern a country with a minority coalition. You don't get anything done.
This is what the journalist Maria Jimena Dusan said, over a week ago, in her column in Semana. Amazing that she's still there. But she said she remembers an unnamed advisor to Duque when they won the elections. She says she remembers this guy saying, if this president and his cohorts are unable to sign or reach some sort of an agreement with some center or center left parties, there is a high possibility that the president will not see out his tenure, his 4 years, which seems to be ringing true right now. I mean, you say we don't want him to resign. We just want him to acknowledge that there are other people in the country aside from the technocrats and businesses he represents. You know, the rest of us,
and his party of crazies and narcos that is the Democratic Center.
Not democratic and not central.
No, it's a party of far right crazies and narco elites. I mean, like let's not forget that the Duque's political patron, Alvaro Uribe, is probably weeks away from going to prison. Like the Democratic Center Party, it is entirely constructed around like the protection of the interests of Uribe and his clan, half of whom are criminals, and. They conjure up some sort of like far right terminology, like in order to well, to destabilize democracy and get away with organized crime. Which would like it's unimaginable that Uribe is still in politics in the first place. The guy has like the evidence of him being a Medellin cartel associate is overwhelming. Like his older brother has two children with the sister of the number two of El Chapo, Dolly Cifuentes. His younger brother is currently on trial because he formed a death squad in 1992. And these investigations have been made impossible because of the systematic assassination of witnesses. Like the Democratic Center is basically an organized crime organization with very sophisticated political machinery. They're just abusing the political system in order to evade to evade justice.
So where do we? I mean, Adrian, you're better placed than me. But where do we see? I mean, we're looking at the strikes, and we've got this very, very difficult situation ahead. But we're coming, we're coming into December and so on. But where do we see it all heading? I mean, I don't have. I hope that it doesn't go away, and I hope that violence doesn't increase. Because there's been this simmering of discontent that, well, obviously this goes back decades, but has really come to the surface in the last 15, 16 months with the Duque administration. It's been allowed to come to the, I think it was probably there in some respects with Santos, but he played the game. He was a politician. Well, we'll do this and we'll do that. Partially, probably it came to the surface in Santos with the paro agrario, but if we're looking now at the Duque administration, 2019, as we come to the end of the year, what can we say is going to be the, what can we try and predict?
Well, if Duque is seriously going to engage in the national conversation that he promised, and is sincerely going to listen, execute proposals made, for example, by the elected mayors of Bogota and Medellin, the indigenous organizations in Cauca. The best case scenario is that Duque does what he said that he would do, which is talk to everybody. What all these people are going to tell him is you got to execute the peace deal. So you, and particularly the coca eradication, the voluntary coca eradication program must be executed as soon as possible because the drug trade is out of control. And people are also going to say that he needs to like stop waging this political war on what he perceives as left, which is everything from the center right to the actual left. There's like the people around Duque have this perception of reality, like the fact that they call themselves Democratic Center. I don't know if it's deceit of the public opinion or self-deceit. I have the idea that sometimes like they believe their own lies. Like when Duque goes to television and talks about like him, like about like the silent majority. Well, the silent majority also tells him to get fucked. Like he doesn't represent any majority whatsoever. He represents and actively promotes the interests of a tiny group of people. And the Colombian people are just not in agreement with it. They want a president of the republic who execute public policies, i.e. policies that serve the public, not his political party. And his financial patrons. So basically, like, people are demanding that he be more democratic, which he has not been. If you look at the conflicts of interests, for example, between the government and Grupo Aval, the banking conglomerate that sponsored his campaign, the conflicts of interest are just staggering, and as a consequence, like, Grupo Aval gets to do all kinds of, like, infrastructure projects that end up being a disaster and running like one third of the country in an economic crisis. And nobody is investigating it because, like, they got the government on their payroll, which is not how a democracy works. Like the democratic system has been hijacked by individuals that are abusing the democratic system to promote their private interests. And that's, people are not stupid.
It sounds like, I mean, we're being run, Duque is being run by mafias when you put it like that. It sounds,
but by business cartels and by organized crime cartels. Yes,
he's so trussed up with, let's say, debts to these different business, as you say, business cartels and organized criminal political cartels, that there's just no way of him ever being his own man, is there?
No, and this is the risk we're facing at the moment, because, like, all in this national conversation that started today, Sunday, Duque is going to be told, you must be a president of the republic. You must stop abusing the democratic system to pay back favors to the people who got you in office. However, if he complies with the demands of the people, of the strike leaders, and of the political leaders, like the elected officials, and hopefully other political parties, they're going to basically tell him to break the pact with his own political party and with his financial backers, who are not likely to accept this. So it's a bad case scenario is that Duque doesn't have the authority to assume his role as president of the republic and work in the interest of the public, because if he does so, Santos did so. When Santos was elected, he was like, I'm now the president of the republic, so I'm going to execute public policies. Consequently, the violence went down to record lows. The FARC demobilized. More and more people got access to education. All kinds of policies were executed that were basically developing the country, and what Duque is doing is a heist, and a complete well, like there's just no state. I got a death threat 3.5 months ago. I'm still waiting for the prosecution to call me back after I filed a complaint. The whole state has collapsed, or is only working for the benefit of that small group of people that Duke owes favors to.
A terrifying situation if we take it take it as given. And we have to consider all of this and everything that you've said. I mean, there's no one who has been more deeply involved in Colombia's politics and more deeply committed to reporting the news out of Colombia than Adrian Elsamer from Colombia Reports. I'm very concerned personally as to how this might go, because I don't see that Duque can pull into the center ground and isolate the far right on his party or try and detach himself perhaps from his financial and political patrons. I find it very difficult.
Well, he can.
Okay, I hope so.
I mean, like he has the constitutional authority. There is a center right voting bloc in Congress that has been telling Duque to move to the center ever since he took office, and now the people are enforcing this. Because what the people are doing at the moment by rising up is nothing that the political parties in Congress, from the left to the right, have been saying since August last year. And what the protesters are doing is nothing that is not supported by the Constitution and the courts. Contrary to what Duque has been doing, who on multiple occasions has seen like government initiatives sunk in Congress or by the court because he wants to implement policies or do schemes that are simply illegal. However, I think the people have him cornered right now, and I think the people know how strong the momentum is, and I think all those guys that thought they were going to make a lot of money with Duque are going to accept that that they lost their money.
Well, let's hope we can, you know, all reach some sort of peaceful situation, huh?
I'm relatively optimistic that we can, because Duque is not a far right politician. He has never had any far right ideologies. He has always been, and like I've talked to him and colleagues have confirmed this, like this is Duque is in essence and in nature a consensus politician. He has not been acting as one because, like, he's the puppet of the Sarmiento family and the Uribe family. Now the Uribe family is going to go to jail, so hopefully Duque will be able to release himself from the stranglehold that he's been in over the past 15 months. And I believe the people, including myself, would wholeheartedly support him moving to the center. Because if you look at like who is on the street, like people in Poblado here in Medellin, were shouting like Uribe Paraco el pueblo está berraco. In other words, Uribe, you paramilitary, the people are fed up with your shit. And so like if even like people in the rich parts of town and people who voted for Duque are rising up, you're not talking about an ideological thing. Like people do not expect Duque to move to the left. Well, they expect him to move to the center, but for pragmatic reasons, like for reasons of governability. The people's general demand is they want an immediate end to misrule and abuse of power. And I don't think Duque has any option, because the international community, like the United States, the European Union, the United Nations, they've all sided with the legitimacy of the protests. Duque stands completely isolated. And I don't think he or his cartel buddies actually have the force to resist like the resistance that they are facing now. Unless they are willing to commit massacres and that type of shit.
Let's end on this positive note that you've been saying, that you know if he's capable of doing this, this is a good thing. This is a good thing, and the protest will have seen through, you know, what it wanted from the beginning, to try and to push the president towards the center ground and to put the country back on track.
And respect democratic principles. If this goes well, the outcome will be that governability in Colombia will see a significant improvement, which is going to be better for everyone. Like, it'll be better for business. It'll be better for public security. It'll be better for everything. And unfortunately, things like Duque's like misreading of the situation, and the fact that he has been, well, that he owes money to certain people, has not given him the authority. But I think that the people at Grupo Aval, and I think Uribe also understands that unless Duque gives in to the demands of just being the president of a democratic republic, they're going to be next. Like, people were holding anti-Uribe protests at 10 kilometers from his farm. We all know where he lives.
Yeah.
So it won't be very difficult to if on Saturday people were standing, like thousands of people were standing in front of Duque's private residence, like shouting murderer at him, I think it's pretty clear who's in control at the moment, and it's not Duque, and it's not his patrons.
We're going to have to end on that, and we're going to have to end on that. There's not enough time. I think we could go on for hours, but I think and I feel that we've covered so much, and hopefully this is has been an enjoyable and informative episode 301 for you out there across the world, hoping to understand a little bit more about Colombia's politics and the troubling times that we as a people and, of course, President Duque are facing here in Colombia. And I'll take this moment to thank Adrian Alsima, the director of Colombia Reports there in Medellin. Very important to fund and to sponsor independent journalism. And I know that Colombia Reports, you know, it survives off reader contributions. There's a Patreon page, which you can find on the website, top corner, and you can put up there and pledge money, even a one-off fee, a one-off figure, or indeed, monthly fee, as a lot of places do too. But this is very important that independent media and, continues to survive and tell the news in places such as Colombia. So Adrian, thank you so much for your time and sharing so much knowledge on this situation.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Well, that's me, Richard McCall, signing off for this episode 301 of the Colombia Calling podcast. I hope you enjoyed last week's show about Troyana going on in Cali, the webcam industry, documentary / theater show. Next week, we've got author and journalist, war correspondent Toby Muse on the show, and he'll be talking about his new book coming out in March, which is called Kilo, Inside the Deadliest Cocaine Cartels from the Jungles to the Streets. So be sure to tune into that one. And I have indeed spoken to Daniel Eggington again, the guy who wants to cross the Darien Gap on foot through the different and the lesser traveled manner. And so we will be speaking to him before he sets off, and we'll probably try and talk him out of it once again. So thank you again for listening. This has been episode 301, and I've been Richard McCall. Bye-bye.